Hey everybody, welcome back to another edition of the On the Rocks podcast. I'm Denver Post sports writer Kyle Newman, here live from the Denver Post newsroom, bringing you another edition of the show during the Major League Baseball All-Star break. And we've got a pretty packed show for you here today, folks. Main guest coming up on the main segment is Rocks Pile's Jake Shapiro. We're going to be talking midseason analysis, what went wrong, what went right, and what to be grateful for as the Rocks are just two games back here headed into the second half. And looking forward to said second half. The schedule is going to toughen up. Are these Rockies ready to rise to the challenge? Plus, Jake and I are going to be doing a little trade talk. Manny Machado to the Dodgers, etc., etc. And then in the final closing segment of this week's On the Rocks podcast, we're going to have some farm analysis, breaking down the biggest Rocks prospects. And that'll feature a lengthy interview with farm director Zach Wilson. Plus, I'll give you my thoughts on the latest MLB Twitter drama. And that, of course, coming out of the All-Star game, Josh Hader's insensitive tweets dug up from many, many years ago. And when I say many years ago, it's in Twitter terms. I believe it was back in 2011. We'll dive into that and lots of similarities there to Ryan Rolison, the Rocks' number 22 overall pick in the first round this year, who also came under fire for what he tweeted back in 2012. That was dug up after he was drafted. So big pack show here for you today. Plenty of analysis, plenty of hardball talk on the Colorado Club. Again, this is Kyle Newman with the Denver Post, and you're listening to the On the Rocks podcast. Come back for the main segment featuring Rocks Pile's Jake Shapiro. Hey everybody, welcome back to the On the Rocks podcast. I am Denver Post sports writer Kyle Newman here at the Denver Post newsroom during the Rockies All-Star break, bringing you another episode of the show. And on the main segment here today, we have special guest Jake Shapiro from Rocks Pile, among other publications, recent graduate of CU and been to basically all the Rocks home games this year, vigorously tweets about them from his Twitter handle, at Shapalicious. So, Jake, welcome to the show, man.
Thanks for having me, Kyle. Grew up reading the Denver Post and a big fan of the work here and has always been, from Benjamin Hockman's work all the way through to Woody Page and all the great sport writers. You know, that's what you grow up reading if you're a Denver sports fan. So it's a great honor to be here.
Yeah, I grew up reading those names as well, you know, even going back all the way to Rick Riley in his early Denver Post days. So welcome to the show, Jake. Hey, before we get into some Rockies analysis, midseason talk, what went right, wrong, and what we should be appreciative of if you're a Rockies fan, as just two games back heading into the second half, and then looking forward to that second half, and also talking some trade talk. And by trade talk, I mean trade deals that have already gone down, most notably Manny Machado from the Orioles to the Dodgers for a plethora of prospects. Also, Padres wheeling and dealing their sellers right now, shipping off hand. We'll talk about that. So before we get into all that, Jake, just give us a little background on you, because, you know, I got to say, I always tell you you're my favorite blogger, and some might think that's, you know, an insult, but it's really a term of endearment, because this guy, you hustle on the Twitter sphere, you're cutting up the clips, you're so relevant, you know, hot takes Jake, some might call you. And I roll my eyes, and I like your tweets at the same time. So good. That's an accomplishment. So give us a little bit of your background.
As long as you're getting a reaction, that's the goal.
Absolutely.
Grew up in Chicago, moved to Denver, or Boulder rather, when I was 12. Graduate of Boulder High School, graduate of CU Boulder. Huge, staunch fan of everything Colorado. I consider myself a Colorado local despite not being born here. And I really just love baseball, and I've been covering the Rockies now for 5 years. I used to work for BSN Denver. I've freelanced for USA Today, ESPN, AP a little bit. So I've been around a lot, and I've seen a lot of stuff, from the Rockies being by far the worst team in the National League, whether their record said so or not, to being in the wild card game last year where I was in Arizona and saw that, well, what was a train wreck turn into what was a chance for them to win that ball game. So I've been a huge supporter of growth of baseball in Colorado, and I've loved watching it at the major league level.
So there you heard it, Jake. So 220-somethings here now on the podcast. On the Rocks, Kyle Newman alongside Jake Shapiro. We'll dive right in here. So you talked about that wild card game last year. I was there too, John Gray going off the rails, but then the Rockies hitting their way back into it and Diamondbacks then continuing to out-hit them en route to the win. And you look to this first half here coming in with such high expectations, all that boatload of cash poured into the bullpen. And to be just two games back with the shaky offense at first, the starting pitching that took a while to settle in, and the bullpen that has been pretty much disastrous. I mean, say for the past couple weeks where they've shown a little bit of improvement. How are you feeling at this point in the season, two games back, heading into Arizona?
I talked about this on my podcast yesterday, Kyle. And one of the things that's so different about last year compared to this year is this. Last year in June, they were so good. They were unbelievably good. Then they limped into the All-Star break, but they had a great finishing day on the Kyle Freeland almost no-hitter. Then this year, they limped their way through June and then got hot going into the All-Star break. They're playing their best baseball right now. Finishes that last Sunday before the All-Star break on a great moment in that Trevor Story walk-off home run. So the difference, though, between, you know, just the up and down of the season is this. Last year at this time, despite having a better record, they were out of contention in the division. They had no chance at winning the division. The Dodgers had already run away with it. Now, you could say that with the Dodgers and Diamondbacks in front of the Rockies, even though they're two games back, it's going to be a tough sled for the Rockies, and it really is, especially because the Dodgers just acquired Manny Machado. But because you're only two games back, you're only 2.5 games back, the wild card, even though there's more teams bunched in, you have to feel pretty good about yourselves, considering the fact that your level of play throughout the course of the season has only increased, and you still have not gotten a healthy David Dahl. You still have not gotten Carlos Estevez, who should be a big bullpen acquisition. John Gray was horrible in the first half, who was supposed to be your ace. Now, granted, you got some surprises in a guy like Trevor Story, who I think a lot of people that really follow the Rockies were expecting this, but you know, most of the people thought this was a surprise. And then you look around, and you know, so there's give and takes. You know, Charlie Blackmon had a bad first half, right, but Nolan Arenado was amazing the last month. So there's ups and downs. It can't all be perfect, but they're playing their best baseball right now.
And, hey, how about that starting rotation, especially Tyler Anderson and Kyle Freeland over their last four starts, Cy Young-like, and Germán Márquez over his last three starts heading into the break, also 22 Ks, you know, a one-some ERA. So they're dicing. They're coming along. Senzatela, Bettis, they're dealing with those finger issues. But
and Márquez is also, like, the fifth best hitter on the team.
Exactly. Márquez, I wrote about this on DenverPost.com/Rockies, you know, on pace to win the Silver Slugger, only the second Colorado pitcher to do so. Mike Hampton wasn't so good on the mound, though. Germán Márquez is getting it done on the mound and in the box, eh?
You would have thought Jason Jennings would have been a candidate to win it back in the day. No better debut than Jason Jennings at me, if you would like. Sorry, Kyle Freeland. That one was pretty cool, too. But yeah, no, the starting rotation, especially here lately, has been terrific. And the start John Gray made, although it was not his best start of his career, coming back from the minor leagues, was awesome to watch. It showed that John Gray, finally in a big game, lived up to the billing. And that was the knock on John Gray's. Every time he got handed the ball and said, "We need something from you today," he failed. And he finally succeeded in that situation, and he had all the pressure on him. So that is a great sign heading into the second half. Kyle Freeland is on pace to have probably the greatest season ever by a Colorado Rockies pitcher, has been terrific, and Tyler Anderson cannot be overlooked. Every time he stepped on the mound and been healthy, he's been good for the Rockies. And the guy you mentioned, as you talked about, that you wrote on DenverPost/Rockies, I'll plug you as well, Germán Márquez, is a guy that really has the potential to be an ace. And this is always a thing that gets talked about with the Rockies, whether it's John Gray or Kyle Freeland. But Germán Márquez, the day he was acquired from Tampa Bay and the Corey Dickerson for Jake McGee with Kevin Padlo tacked on trade, I was told by someone high ranking in the Rockies organization, this is not the Jake McGee trade. This is the Germán Márquez trade. And that trade, from that day forward, you look at the next spring training, I kept getting texts from scouts in the Rockies organization going, oh my God, this kid's curveball, this kid's fastball. So although the outside expectations and even probably the expectations within the Rockies fandom aren't for Germán Márquez to be the dude going forward, Germán Márquez has the potential and the talent to be that guy, and we're starting to see it at least in stretches here, especially after he started letting less home run balls out, which was his problem in the second half last year.
Well, and even in the games he's dominated in these past couple games, the runs he's given up have been off of home runs. If he cuts those down, he'll be wheeling and dealing. Again, folks, this is the On the Rocks podcast. Kyle Newman alongside Jake Shapiro. Again, you can at him at Shapalicious, at me at Kyle Newman DP, if you agree, disagree, or have an alternative take to one of our hot takes. So a little mid-season analysis there. Let's look forward to the second half, and let's start with some of these marquee trades that have been going down. First off, with Machado to the Dodgers. Never a good day when you get a perennial all-star shipped into your division, especially the guys who are leading the division right now. But I liked your tweet on this, and this one I didn't roll my eyes at. I could have liked twice. Okay, everyone in MLB is buying big time names, but the Rockies have something better: the friends we made along the way. You look at what the Dodgers gave up for Machado. It was just like a dearth or wealth of prospects, should I say? Do you think the Rockies are gonna part ways with any of their prospects these next couple days, or do they need to do something to match, I guess, this Machado move?
Two takes on that. One on the tweet. What I will say is that, especially with baseball, buy in all the way into this Rockies team, and that's what that tweet is about. It's so fun when your baseball team is good. It only happens 5 times in the 26 years of the Rockies where they've been really competing for a playoff spot. So buy in, make your friends. It's going to be a fun fall, fun summer, rest of the summer for Rockies fans, and there's no point. They'll probably break your heart. They're probably not going to win the World Series, but I'd rather my team break my heart and give me that 2-out double in the 8th inning of a game in 2 months from now that propels them to a wild card, then not be all the way and feel like I missed out on that.
Hey, now, on the podcast last week, I asked Noel Cuevas what his plans for the offseason were. He said, well, first, we're going to make the playoffs and hopefully win the World Series with the Rockies. Rookie's confident, okay? But yeah, you're right. It might take another mile-high miracle to make this happen. A run at a first division crown and first consecutive playoff appearance, and they're going to have to outlast, it looks like, the D-backs and Dodgers and probably the Giants too.
Right, and that's part of this Manny Machado trade, is when you're the Rockies right now, your window is next year. That's your best chance to win the World Series. What the Rockies need to accomplish this year is get to the playoffs, get some experience, get knocked out. And what I mean by that is all of their pitchers, John Gray, Tyler Anderson, have a combined 4 innings of playoff experience, pretty much. And those 4 innings didn't go too well. These guys need to get that playoff experience. Nolan Arenado's played 1 game of playoff baseball. They need that experience. The Dodgers now, on the other hand, at the end of Clayton Kershaw's span here, they need to go all in. That prospect that they traded in the minor leagues, that outfielder, top 100 prospect in Major League Baseball, and 4 other dudes to the Orioles, they weren't going to be affecting this Dodgers team for 3 to 4 years. The Dodgers' window is right now. The Rockies' window is next year, and that's why I keep saying do not trade Brendan Rodgers, the Rockies' top prospect, under any circumstances, because he should be on this roster by the end of the year. He should be affecting this team very much so next year. Now, on the other hand, when you've got prospects like Riley Pint, Ryan Vallee, way down in the minors, trade them. Trade them right now and get yourself a reliever to go deeper into this postseason. But it's a fine line of maximizing your window versus maximizing your ability to win it in a given year. And right now, the Dodgers are at the end of their window after going to Game 7 of the World Series with what looks like an unstoppable team in the Astros right now and trying to get back there. They went out and got the best 26-year-old in baseball.
And folks, the On the Rocks podcast, Jake Shapiro alongside myself, Kyle Newman. Thanks for listening in, and you mentioned some of those prospects. If you listen into segment 3 here of the show today, you'll hear farm director Zach Wilson talking about several of those guys, and as well as Garrett Hampson making some waves as well in AAA, in addition to Rodgers down in AA. And you mentioned the Rockies' window. Let's touch on this real quick before we move on to another subject. Nolan Arenado. Patrick Saunders has said multiple times he feels he's on his way out after this. I'm kind of in the same boat. Unless the Rockies somehow not only make the playoffs, but make a huge run. Nolan Arenado doesn't want to just go to the wild card and lose. He doesn't want to play in one playoff game every 3 or 4 years. He wants to go to a contender. I wouldn't be surprised if he ended up in LA with the Dodgers, perennial power, who, you know, he grew up in SoCal. What are your thoughts? What are your impressions? You're in the clubhouse every day, just like me. You talk to him all the time, just like me. What are your thoughts?
I think you and Patrick have a pretty good opinion on this. The reporting Patrick has done on this has been really, really well done, especially this far out, because Nolan's not a free agent until after next year. So
right. This
really hasn't been a pressing story, although it's been the number one question hanging over the Rockies fan base and their organization for 4 years. Not even a joke. That's been true. I wrote about it 4 years ago that the Rockies need to sign Nolan Arenado long term. Anyway, with Nolan, what needs to happen for the Rockies to sign Nolan Arenado long term is this. They're going to need to sign DJ LeMahieu. They're going to need to commit that money. Nolan Arenado needs to know that his team is bought in to winning immediately and winning in the future. And for him, that means signing guys like Charlie Blackmon, which they already did, and signing DJ LeMahieu. So we'll see if they follow through on that. They need to make the playoffs this year. They need to make the playoffs next year. And they need to make a deep, deep run one of the 2 years. Probably it helps more next year. So in order to sign Nolan Arenado, you need to show that you're committed to winning on a level that we have not seen here in Colorado. Whether you believe in this committed to winning notion that the Monforts are or aren't, I'll tell you what, if you're not committed to winning, you don't spend $108 million on your bullpen. But there is a cap to how much money you're willing to spend, and smart money. Is it smart to go and spend this money on DJ LeMahieu, who's older than 30 now? Is it smart to do that when you have Ryan McMahon, Garrett Hampson, and Brendan Rodgers, all really highly regarded prospects that can all play second base? We will see, but right now the Rockies are somewhat being held hostage by this Nolan Arenado situation, and they've been held hostage by the situation for a couple years now, and that's why they structured the Ian Desmond contract like that. That's why they structured Michael Kadire's contract like that way back when. They've been planning for this for a very long time, so they should have the money to do this, especially with the TV contract increasing and a new TV deal coming right after they sign Nolan. And if they sign Nolan, they'll be able to get a much bigger TV deal. So they should have the money able to do this, but it's about convincing Nolan to stay here.
Again, folks, Kyle Newman and Jake Shapiro on the Rocks podcast. You can at him at Shapalicious for all of his hot takes. Hot Take Jake is what I call him. Actually, I just came up with that on the drive-in. I thought I'd drop it on you.
One of the public relations directors in the area calls me the next Stephen A. Smith, which...
What? Now, that is an insult. That is an insult.
I don't know about that. He's...
I think your hot takes are reasonable. I think
they are, but he's entertaining. He's one of the only people in our industry that drives an audience.
All right, a debate for another time here on the Rocks podcast. Here we'll close this final segment before we move to the third, and or we'll close this middle segment before we move to the final segment, talking Rockies farm prospects and the Josh Hader situation with his insensitive tweets being dug up during the All-Star game. That more to come on that in the final segment. But here, Jake, let's finish with a discussion of this second half. And hey, going's going to get tough for these guys. At AZ for the first three game set, then they got the defending World Series champs for two games at home, Oakland. It heats up here. How do they continue this 13-3 momentum they rode into the break with?
It's impossible to go 13-3 over 16 games of baseball consistently. They're not going to do that. But I do like the way they lined up their rotation. Marquez, Freeland, and then they've got Grayer, Senzatella, not sure what they're going to do yet, then Anderson. And one of the things I like about that with the way the Rockies' rotation is going to be, especially with the fact that they looks like they're going to have four starters initially, then move to five, Bud Black has managed very aggressively for the Colorado Rockies since they switched to a four-man rotation, eight-man bullpen, and a five-man bench. The five-man bench has allowed him to play his cards twice in a game and play it aggressively, and I think that changed the mentality of the club as a whole. And if they keep playing aggressively, especially on the base paths, especially defensively, the way they've been playing defensively here as of late and all season, really, they'll be in good shape. Now, the clutch hitting isn't always going to be there. That's just how baseball works. But I don't care who they play. It doesn't matter what opponents the Rockies play. I've come to learn this over covering a couple years of Rockies baseball. It just matters how well the Rockies play. And how do I know this? Well, look at last year. No one thought when the Rockies went and played eight road games against the Dodgers and Diamondbacks that they would come away with an even record. They went 6-2 in those games and have pretty much locked up a playoff spot. Now, what I will say is the math is not in the Rockies' favor to make the playoffs as of right now. It's very much not in their favor.
Right.
But if they continue to play their level of good baseball, which for them, it means something different than it does the Dodgers or Diamondbacks, they will be okay. But they need to just continue to play good baseball for themselves and not worry about other teams. And it sounds so coach speak and so much like Bud Black, but he is right in that sense that it doesn't matter who they play or when they play as long as they're playing well.
Well, there you have it, folks. Jake Shapiro on the second half prognosis for the Colorado Rockies. And hey, one little last tidbit I wanted to throw in before we close the segment. You're doing play-by-play this summer for the Boulder Collegians, one of the best summer league teams in the Rocky Mountain Baseball League. So check that out. They're still going, right?
Playoffs to start tonight.
Playoffs start tonight. So tune in via YouTube or what?
Yeah, YouTube. You can follow the Boulder Collegians Twitter page at Boco Collegians. It's great. Nothing better than local baseball. Kyle, you played in the RMBL. It's good, just great to support your local team, whether it's the Rockies or somewhere down at college.
A lot of history there too, folks. Again, follow Jake on Twitter at Shapalicious. And Jake, thanks for coming on the show, man.
Thank you so much, Kyle.
Folks, listening to the final segment, and Zach Wilson comes on to talk some of the Rockies' top prospects, plus an analysis and discussion on Twitter drama in the MLB. Stay tuned. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the third and final segment of the On the Rocks podcast. Thanks for tuning in to the podcast this week during the All-Star break. If you just listened to the main segment there, thanks to Jake Shapiro from Rockspile for coming on the show, talking all things Colorado baseball, breaking down the first half, and what the club needs to do in the second half in order to make a run at that first division title. Again, thanks to Jake, and I am Denver Post sports writer Kyle Newman here on the final segment of today's show, and we'll start off with an intro discussion on some of the Rockies' top farm prospects, Riley Pint and Peter Lambert, two right-handed pitchers that are the Rockies' starters of the future. Really, you can ask any casual Rockies fan, and you can ask Director of Player Development Zach Wilson, and they will pretty much all tell you the same thing. Riley Pint, Peter Lambert, two arms to keep an eye on. And of course, we'll also be discussing some of these other infielders, Garrett Hampson, Brendan Rodgers, Colton Welker, all highly touted players coming up through the Rockies system. Riley Pint, he's a 20-year-old coming off an oblique injury. He's thrown again, though. He'll be back on the mound soon for the Boise Hawks. Peter Lambert, the 21-year-old, he's had a quick ascent through the minors. Got promoted to AAA from Hartford on June 30th. And then Hampson, Rogers, Welker, those guys can continue to churn down the minors. Hampson especially promoted May 17th to AAA, where he's hitting .310 for the Isotopes. So go ahead, folks, and take a listen in here to my exclusive interview with Rockies Director of Player Development, Zach Wilson, talking about Pint to begin with, and then plus some extended thoughts on Lambert and Hampson. Take a listen in.
I know it's been a pretty short sample size in his big league career so far, but what have you really liked about him? And is he almost like living up to some of the hype? Because he's, you know, when you talk to the fan base, Riley Pint's a name they already know, it seems.
Yeah. Well, I don't really pay much attention to the quote-unquote hype. You know, I think just like any other player, they take time to develop, and they're all on their own kind of timelines and path. And, you know, Riley's been struck by a couple injuries here this year, which obviously hasn't been helpful. But, you know, that happens throughout everybody's career. You know, I think for him right now, they're just happening a little earlier. So, again, everybody's on their own timetable. Everybody's got their own path. Certainly Riley does. You know, let us not forget that he's only 20 years old. Right. And so there's plenty of time here to make sure that we're doing things correctly with him so that he eventually becomes a big league pitcher. And that's really all that matters at the end of the day, is that, you know, we do what's right for him every single day in his own development to make sure that he stays on this path to becoming a big league pitcher. And he's on his way, and he's had a couple setbacks this year due to injury, but that kind of stuff happens, so no big deal.
So you mentioned just 20 years old. I mean, what is his biggest upside at this point in his career right now?
Well, I think, you know, if you just look at this stuff, I mean, this guy's a prototypical, true high-end prospect. You know, obviously the velocity is always there. That's what everybody wants to talk about. But it's also a plus curve, a plus slider, and a plus change. And so what you have to do with guys like Riley is you have to harness that stuff. And you have to start, you know, it's easy to chuck all that stuff out there in high school and guys just swing and miss. So it's really about consistency now of all of those pitches. And certainly consistency in the strike zone and commanding all of those pitches. And that takes time with a young high school pitcher. But his upside is enormous because he's got gifts, natural gifts that, you know, a lot of people just don't have.
So switching gears here, Zach, to Peter Lambert, another really young, gifted pitcher in the organization. And in talking to Mark Wiley, he was mentioning how his fastball has – you know, really increased since he came into the system. Like, what is that, just a natural development? Is he really hitting the weight room? I mean, it's a combination of those factors.
Well, I think it's a combination of a lot of factors. You know, I can tell you when our scouts saw him as an amateur, he just had the type of athleticism and the type of arm action that you could project the velocity was going to go up. I think all of that is held true. You know, once we got him in our system, even as late as last year, you could tell there was still a couple more ticks in there from a velo standpoint. And now he's averaging 93 as opposed to averaging 91. And he's topping out at 96 with a handful of 94 and 95. So, you know, between that and just physical maturity, you know, certainly our development process in terms of the weight room, our throwing program, you know, all of those things have been factors. And so, again, you know, much like Riley, he had his own path, both from a physical development and a pitching development standpoint. And you know, he hasn't been a surprise to anybody. He's followed a great path to this point. And what really, I think, is the separator for Peter is that he's a tremendous competitor. For a kid his age, and I still call him a kid, you know, but for a player his age, the things that he's able to do on the mound in terms of pitch feel, pitch ability, commanding the fastball, and the way he competes through all of it are just are very mature. And, you know, the way he pitches is older than his actual age. And that is like I said, that's a big separator for him.
And considering this is an organization that has, you know, recent track record of developing these young arms, getting them to the major league level, like Gray, like Freeland, I mean, do you see like remnants of the current big leaguers and some of these younger arms, or even arms that are, you know, other arms that are AAA, like DJ Johnson, you know, other arms you've talked about?
Well, I think, you know, I think our development process as a whole has paid dividends, obviously. You know, you even go back to the Marquez's, which was an acquire through trade and then develop process.
Right.
You know, as you mentioned, Freeland, Gray, Tyler Anderson, you know, Chad Bettis, you know, even the, like you said, John Gray, Jeff Hoffman's who's helped, and is continuing to get better and is a big league pitcher in his own right. You know, all of these guys are examples of, you know, how the process has went and the success of our process that we've established over the last few years here. And there's more guys coming. And so, you know, Peter and Riley are two examples of that. And there's even more in the pipeline. And so, you know, our job as player development staff members in this organization is to continue to churn out major league players on both sides of the ball. And we've had, I think, a lot of success so far doing that. And it's certainly showed up in the rotation and will continue, I think, to show up with these pitchers that are coming as well.
One final thing for you here, Zach. Looking at especially the AAA and AA rosters, position player wise, I mean, who has really come on strong these last month, month and a half here, you know, leading into the Major League All-Star break?
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, a name obviously that sticks out is a guy like Garrett Hampson,
right,
who has, you know, he started in AA this year, very quickly proved that he needed more of a challenge, and we gave it to him early, and he's done nothing but continue his success at the AAA level. And, you know, he's really using all parts of his game the way that he needs to, and he's kind of molding into the big league player that we all envisioned. It's a guy that, you know, can walk, can get his hits, stays in the middle of the field, can also pop one out on you. You know, and just as it gets on base and then becomes a menace, he uses his speed in all aspects of his game and is extremely versatile defensively. He can play second, short, and even center field. In center field, it's been a handful of times, but he's got a very natural, athletic, instinctual way about him out there. And so, you know, he has really, I think, climbed up people's radars more externally than internally. I think we knew what we had there. And he's really come a long way. You know, people forget this is only his second full season.
Right.
He skipped completely over Asheville, and now he's in AAA 2 years after he got drafted. And so very, very happy with where he's at, and I think he's, you know, on the brink of being able to help us at the Major League level sooner than later.
Again, folks, that was Rockies Director of Player Development, Zach Wilson, joining me by phone for this week's podcast, just talking about Riley Pint, Peter Lambert, and Garrett Hampson, some of the top young studs in the Rockies farm system. Again, I'm Kyle Newman, sports writer for the Denver Post on the On the Rocks podcast today. Thanks for listening in. And before we close the show, we have one final segment where I'll give my thoughts on the recent MLB Twitter drama. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, let me fill you in right here. Tuesday night during the All-Star game, Milwaukee's Josh Hader came on to pitch, and he had a pretty rough go of it. Gave up the go-ahead three-run home run in the eighth inning, and as the American League eventually went on to win the game in extra innings, their sixth straight win in the Midsummer Classic. But hey, Josh Hader's performance on the field, probably not as bad as everything he experienced off the field right as soon as he got off the mound on Tuesday night. The Twitter sphere dug up a collection of racist and anti-gay tweets by Hader back from in 2011. And I won't recite them here on the podcast, but pretty bad, using the N-word. One says, "I hate gay people." So just not a lot of good sentiments at all coming from the Brewers reliever. And Major League Baseball has noticed. Hader will have to undergo sensitivity training and participate in MLB diversity and inclusion initiatives following the discovery of these tweets. And he also responded post-game to the tweets. Told reporters, said his phone was blowing up as soon as he came out of the game. And he said, obviously, when you're a kid, you just tweet what's on your mind, and you know, that's what's going on. There's no excuse for what was said. I'm deeply sorry for what I've said and what's been going on. Like I said, it doesn't reflect any of my beliefs going on right now. So those tweets going viral, and that's not unlike, folks, the Rockies' first-round selection this year. Ryan Rolison drafted 22nd overall. Shortly after he was drafted, Twitter sphere once again dredging up the past. In 2012, Rolison tweeted about Obama right after he was elected about shooting Obama. And the quote, basically in paraphrase, says, "If someone shoots Obama during his speech, that's the country's last hope." So, again, that was brought up right after he got drafted. These things, not too hard to find if you're in tune with the Twitter sphere. And in response to that, Rolison said, "It was a stupid tweet. It was immature of me. I had no idea what I was talking about." That was as told to The Athletic in the days following the draft. But, I mean, Ryan Rolison, Josh Hader, these two ball players are recent examples of the perils of social media, but it's far from the first athletes to be exposed for past insensitive tweeting. Wyoming quarterback Josh Allen comes to mind for his
racial slur tweets that were uncovered. Villanova's Dante DiVincenzo, after the national title game, people uncovered racial slurs and gay slurs on his Twitter. So it's obviously becoming a problem in the social media sphere. You know, you talk about recovered preps for a long time, and coaches always talked about monitor your social media accounts. You know, recruiters are looking at that, and this has got to extend to the professional level. And obviously, some of these guys, their old Twitterings are falling under the radar, and that is obviously to their detriment. So long story short, in this final segment of the On the Rocks podcast, here's my, you know, reporter's pro tips for some of these guys. First of all, ideally, don't say racist, sexist, homophobic things on Twitter or anywhere in the first place. You know, that would be the most ideal situation. But hey, if you're going to do that, at least, I mean, keep it from the public eye, because you will be in the public eye from the moment you get drafted, as we saw with Rollison. You'll be in the public eye. You can be in the public eye for a long time like Hader, and all of a sudden it gets dredged up. So, you know, you just really got to watch what you say and do. And I think that's kind of a basic rule of thumb in this Twitter sphere and in this social media world that we live in. But more importantly, I think this is kind of a reflection of the people around some of these ball players. I mean, if I'm Josh Hader, I got to imagine I've got some people around me who are getting paid to do just these sorts of things. Like, hey, go through my social media accounts, make sure I don't have anything egregious on there. Long story short, basic point of this, players need to have social media detectives. They need to have people monitoring their brand and their reputation, because never talked to Josh Hader. Don't know much about him other than that he's been dealing in relief for the Brewers this year. But his reputation and his public persona will be permanently marred from this. And I mean, I think we've already even seen it with Ryan Rollison, a very sour first impression for Rockies faithful after uncovering that Obama tweet from 2012. Now, again, these ball players, both Hader and Rollison, much younger when they sent out these tweets. You know, Rollison was only 15 years old when he sent that tweet out about Obama. And certainly, I wouldn't want things I said, stupid things I said, as a 15-year-old dredged up either. But these guys got to understand they're in the limelight. They're professional ball players. And A, let's not be saying this stuff in the first place. B, let's be smarter about how we use our Twitter, our social media, our Instagram, etc. So that'll do it for the final thoughts on the Rocks podcast this week. Again, thanks to Jake Shapiro for coming on the main segment of the show, and Zach Wilson for providing some insight into some of the top Rockies farm guys. And of course, we'll be back next week. Patrick Saunders will be back from vacation, and we'll have a fresh new episode of the On the Rocks podcast as the Rockies begin the second half and a chase back towards the playoffs. Until next week, folks, I'm Denver Post sports writer Kyle Newman, and take it easy.